And we return. It is today's Topical Currents Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Did you get a little drenched this morning coming in like I did?
I did. But it dried quickly.
Yeah, it's pretty nice out now. This hour we begin with info about an event tomorrow which is dedicated to end violence to women and girls and human trafficking worldwide. It's 1 Billion Rising for Justice Miami and takes place on the downtown campus of Miami-Dade College. Joining us now is women's rights advocate and attorney Nancy Ratson. She's an expert on human trafficking in Florida. Welcome to you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Also with us is philanthropist and 1 Billion Rising advocate Lisa Aiken. She's also the founder of Casa Valentina, an organization which provides aid to Miami-Dade girls who age out of foster care at age 18 and need guidance and support. Welcome to you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Well, let's begin with just an overview of 1 Billion Rising, the day, and when we're calling this Miami, this isn't a Miami event. This is a worldwide project. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. We are one of about 200 countries that are rising tomorrow. This is the second annual 1 Billion Rising. It happened last year, February 14th in 2013, and we had about 220 countries. Basically, the whole world rose. And by rose, we mean danced, marched. It was very local-based. Everybody in each country decided what they best felt was right to stand up and say stop to the violence. So actually, we have a little bit of pressure this year because, at least in the U.S., Miami is the one with the best weather, and so they are counting on us to be out in numbers. Atlanta possibly has to cancel, so we were on a call yesterday with all the global coordinators, and weather seems to be a little bit of an issue.
An issue this year. Well, let's just say where this is. It's taking place tomorrow beginning at 4 p.m. at Miami-Dade College's downtown Wolfson campus on the Kyriakides Plaza, which is where?
It's exactly in the heart, in the center of the campus. You can't miss it. There's parking all around. As this is 1 Billion Rising for Justice, it so happens that it's right below the Federal Justice Court.
Okay.
So, and also a prison. So we'll be facing the justice system in so many words. But we have an incredible group of people that are going to be speaking. We have survivors. We have state attorney for Miami, Catherine Fernandez Rundle. And we have dancers. And we will be showing a documentary on the rising from last year. 1 Billion Rising is the name of the film. It's a 9-minute documentary that was just shown at Sundance. And along with other interviews of celebrities that have been public about 1 Billion Rising and why they feel is very important for all of us to be there and to be present.
Nancy Ratson, give us an idea of the extent of human trafficking in Florida. What's going on?
Well, it is a huge hidden problem that we have. I'm specifically focusing on child sex trafficking in Florida and particularly in Miami. We know that children as young as 12 years old are being sold for sex in Miami and all over Florida, and that the life expectancy of a trafficked child is 7 years. Although there is not data anywhere in the United States about how many children are involved in sex trafficking, we know that it is focused on the most vulnerable populations. That's who the traffickers are manipulating. And so that's our runaway children, our foster care children, our children that have been sexually exploited. So we know that every day in Florida, any given day, we have 30 to 40,000 runaways. And that we know within 48 hours of leaving home, 1 in 3 of those runaways will be approached to be trafficked or for pornography.
Where do they find them? Who finds them where?
These master manipulators, traffickers, find them in malls, in bus stations, around their schools, around group foster homes when they're out. They know exactly where vulnerable children are, and they can assess a child in 60 seconds to know whether that child's vulnerable and ready for grooming by them.
Now, this recent case of a 13-year-old forced to prostitute and then dance at the Miami Beach strip club, do you have any information about that? I know it's an ongoing investigation, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. But that's a typical...
You're exactly right. That is just the tip of the iceberg. That is one of many examples. I can tell you that about a year ago, when the Miami-Dade State's Attorney's Office opened up a sex trafficking unit and put a real lens on what was going on in Miami and worked with law enforcement, that they went from one case to 120 filed cases in Miami and 100 more under investigation. They say it is under every stone they turn. It's just a matter of resources.
So why do you think this has escaped public scrutiny for the most part, the law and the media? Is it, as in this Nicholas Kristof New York Times op-ed piece today, because they're not seen as victims, they're seen as asking for it?
I think we've averted ourselves because we wanted to deny that it's happening here. And so we've talked about human trafficking, and we've bought into the myth that human trafficking is something happening in faraway places beyond our reach and beyond our responsibility. And it has been too painful and complex and difficult for us to really pull back the curtains and see what's happening. And we're creating a movement in Miami where it's going to be a priority and everyone's going to know about it. And it's going to be so apparent that we will create the political will to address it.
Are minorities more vulnerable?
Not really. Okay. It really is every population. I was just reading some data yesterday that said that actually white middle class children are the most vulnerable.
Mm. Is there an internet component of this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's lots of ways that people are trafficked, but there's a big internet component on a site called Backpage where sex is bought and sold, and there's lots of minors that are sold on that site.
What are some... Now, when you're talking about Miami, a lot in Miami, but you're talking about all of South Florida and all of Florida as well?
Yes. Exactly. Miami happens to be, unfortunately, a real hub because of our location, because of our destination city, because of a lot of environment that we have here. It's very attractive, and we attract events that attract trafficking. And so we've become a real hub. And actually, Polaris Project, which is really the think tank, national think tank on trafficking, has said that Miami is within the top one or two cities in the country where there's the most child sex trafficking.
And where's the other?
LA is very big.
Hmm. Lisa Aiken, tell us more about Casa Valentina.
Casa Valentina is an organization for foster youth. We actually serve the population that is aging out after age 18, both male and female. We started with just girls, and now we have girls and boys, and also girls who are already mothers. These are young kids that are exiting the foster system without really any direction. And so we provide a service. We have housing and a whole program designed for them. That we started about 7-8 years ago, that came out of a need from the community. And actually, the catalyst to this organization was Eve Ensler, who is the founder of V-Day and who happened to be in Miami. And I had just moved to Miami, and it was just an incredible example of how the city came together. People that had all different interests joined because of this need. And there were five of us that started the organization. And it has become very, very successful.
For those who don't know, let's go back to the beginning. I think 1998,
yes.
Eve Ensler and V-Day.
Yes.
And this is really an offshoot, 1 Billion Rising, of that. So let's talk about that. So for those who are unaware.
Sure. So Eve wrote The Vagina Monologues and never had actually an idea of becoming an activist. She's a screenplay writer. She's an actor. She is. But after The Vagina Monologues, which she thought was going to be a very positive coming out, let's say. But actually, what happened was all these people were lining up after the show and telling her their most horrible, horrific stories of rape and abuse. And so from that stemmed the idea of creating a movement, which she called V-Day. The V stands for vagina, for violence, victory over violence, and Valentine's Day. So it kind of centered around February, and it is now 16 years old. We have raised over $100 million, and these funds are used at a grassroots level in communities around the world.
Who allocates the funds?
Basically, there's a lot of the fundraising happens by putting on the shows, not only the Vagina Monologue, but a lot of other shows that Eve has written. And so only a percentage goes back to corporate, to V-Day, but the 10%, I believe, the 90% stays in the community. So the people in the communities know what are the needs. And V-Day has a spotlight every year in which they give those funds that they collect to that particular spotlight.
Okay. All right, we are speaking about 1 Billion Rising for Justice, and our guests are Nancy Ratson and Lisa, I just lost
Aiken.
It, Lisa Aiken, because I have your middle name there. And we're going to open the phones when we come back from a break. It's 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Let's take that break, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Lisa Skejola Aiken, a philanthropist and National V-Day board member, heavily involved in several local arts organizations and the founder of Casa Valentina. And Nancy Ratson is an attorney, tenacious advocate for women's rights. She's the immediate past president of the National Council of Jewish Women and chairs the Stop Sex Trafficking Miami campaign. Okay, go ahead.
How did these events tomorrow's big event with the dancing and the speaking, but how does it really have any concrete effect on these violent tendencies of people? Obviously, they don't have a conscience to begin with if they're trafficking and kidnapping people. How does it really have any concrete effect?
The whole idea is that we're an awareness campaign. So this is the issue, that a lot of people are not even aware that this is happening. A lot of people don't realize that one out of three women will be beaten or raped in her lifetime. We are holding the event on a college campus tomorrow, which I think is very appropriate because 300,000 girls on college campuses in America are sexually assaulted every year. In the U.S., this is one of our biggest issues. And so I think what the purpose of it is really spreading the information so that people, and then giving some tools like we will do tomorrow. We'll give a card that kind of has tips on what you can do. If you're a victim, who to call. If you know of a victim, how to help them. You know, it's kind of like giving you the support that you might not get otherwise.
And Nancy, how does the outrage create change? Because that's one of your mottos, right?
Right, exactly. And actually, very consistent with what Lisa was saying, the first step to addressing these deep problems in our community is public awareness. We have to first recognize it's in our community and take responsibility and be outraged to deal with it. And so our campaign, Stop Sex Trafficking Miami, is really a community collaborative campaign to bring awareness to Miami by asking every community organization, thought leader, activist that cares about the exploitation of children to take the messages that we've branded, the graphics, the tools that we've created, and bring it into their spheres of influence and do this heavy lift together. There's not one organization or one spokesperson that's going to pierce through on this. We need to lift it up as a community. And so we've created the tools that are very accessible and we're giving to the community to create the knowledge and the tipping point around this issue.
Talk about the media blitz and how you've managed to pull that off and who's paying for that.
Well, one of the strategies is we are having our banners, our messages about our campaign and the hotline to call and the website as 12-foot banners, king-size banners on the sides of city buses that will cover the whole city of Miami over a 12-month period. And we are seeking a sponsor for each month of the of those 45 buses, and that sponsor will be featured on the bus, on those buses for 45 days, or for, skip for those 45 buses for a month, and obviously on our website, because we really want this to be coming from the grassroots, speaking from the community, and we would love to have sponsors.
What about Broward?
I'm so glad you asked, because friends in both Palm Beach and in Southwest Florida have seen this, the campaign messages, and said, we really like this. We want to talk to you about adopting it here, and actually let's spread it all throughout South Florida and have the one consistent campaign going with clear messaging, so it's unambiguous and we can actually break through and not sound like we're talking about 20 different things. So it looks like we're going to grow.
I just want to give some of these this information. For more information on 1 Billion Rising, by the way, are men welcome?
Very much so.
Okay.
Please.
All
we
right.
can't do it without the men.
Okay, that's tomorrow at Miami-Dade College, and they want a lot of people. I heard there's going to be some filming going on.
Yes, we actually, there will be some videographers that will be working on a documentary for, you know, this rising, this 2014 1 Billion Rising for Justice.
And that's because in many places the weather is so bad.
Yeah,
there
we
may not
we have a little bit of pressure this year, but we also, because we're really putting together an incredible event, we have what we call an intention, which is a tent where people will be able to go in and write kind of an intention or something that they want to release on a rice paper that will be then wrapped. And then at the end of the evening, we're going to have a burning bowl where a fire marshal will be present, and we will actually burn all the notes that that will have been written and kind of in a release process. And we actually we were talking about websites before, and we plan on doing hacktivism. So we're trying to hack sites like Backpage or Craigslist.
How are you doing that?
We will be, there will be an expert there who will tell us exactly from our mobile phones what website to access and information to input. So
I guess there's no legal way you can close, that can be closed down, Backpage. I mean, if it's doing explicitly illegal activities.
Well, there's First Amendment issues.
That's
that
what
have really stood in the way of being able to shut them down.
Okay, well, let me first give the websites. I know
okay.
we have the phone calls. Okay, so it's 1billionrising.org and vday.org for tomorrow's event. It's taking place at Miami-Dade College at starting at 4 p.m. at the downtown Wolfson campus on the Kiriakides Plaza.
Yeah, sorry, Bonnie, if I can interrupt.
Yeah,
if there's a Facebook address, 1 Billion Rising Miami, that has all that information as well.
We'll have it on our website and Facebook page as well.
Okay, and Nancy, StopSexTraffickingMiami.org.
Yes, and on that site right now, you can sign up to be part of this movement. The full site is coming soon, as well as the full force of the community to address this.
And the number, the hotline number is 305-350-5567.
Yes, that is.
And we'll have that also on our website. Okay.
Now we'll get to a telephone call. Deborah in Miami. Hi there.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Deborah Robinson. I'm calling from Miami-Dade College, the medical campus. And we also are having an event at noon tomorrow for the 1 Billion Rising to give information to our health care entity within the community. So,
okay, so tell us where that is at noon.
It's at the medical campus. It's located at 950 Northwest 20th Street in Miami, near Jackson Memorial. And it's where all of our nurses, our EMTs, all of our healthcare entity components are educated. So we feel like it's important from a healthcare point of view to get that information out to our population.
Okay.
That's fantastic, because the whole healthcare group that you're speaking of are often first responders, and for mm-hmm. for the that group to know what the signs are and what they need to do when they see a possible victim. That's incredible. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much.
I also wanted to thank Miami-Dade College. They have been the best partners. Dr. Padron and his whole staff have been so welcoming from the beginning, so I really wanted to thank them.
Since this is a worldwide effort, could you touch on sexual violence, sexploitation, travel destinations, and the lack of legal ramifications in some countries where people can go particularly because they want to molest children?
Yes. As horrific as it is in the United States, it is even more horrendous in other parts of the world where women are not protected at all, and where the culture is really allowing a lot of exploitation and violence against women. And so there are the stories coming out of other countries, and the lack of protection is really horrific. And something, and when we look at an international basis, and really even nationally, we have to look not just at sex trafficking, we have to look at labor trafficking, and really what is modern-day slavery involving 27 million people around the country.
Do you think that some victims of sex trafficking are afraid to reveal themselves? I mean, is fear a big part of this?
Absolutely, Bonnie. It's fear. It's also a trauma bond that they have with their trafficker.
Like a Stockholm syndrome.
Exactly. So it becomes a very complex situation. Even when you rescue these victims, to have them be in a position empowered enough to be able to help with the prosecution, which is so critical, because we have an endless pool of potential victims, and until we can really prosecute the traffickers and the mm-hmm. buyers, we can't shut it down. So it is very complex.
I suppose that these young underage girls who are runaways, if they're on the streets, they make Florida a destination, just because if they're on the streets, it's in a warm climate. So I suppose these predators would be hanging out at bus stations and getting their...
Well,
their
foster kids. Homes and...
And malls. Yeah. And actually, a lot of these are kids from our own backyards. These are kids from one part of Miami to another part of Miami.
They're having difficulty with their parents, so they decide just to split.
Actually, 1 in 7 children run away before the age of 18, of all of our children.
And how often is it that the parents actually expel,
put out
their children?
And that happens too. A lot of these children are coming from homes that where they don't feel their needs are being met. But a lot of the children run away as part of the rebellious cycle of youth, yeah. And then they become extremely vulnerable.
Data from the foster youth is that they change about 15 foster homes within up to the age of 18. So.
What is the average age of the runaway and the victim of sex trafficking?
Well, the average age of a sex trafficked victim is 13 to 14 years old, and I don't know if I said this earlier, but it's a really horrible data point that needs to be heard, that the life expectancy of a sex trafficked child is 7 years.
So once they're in the
vicious cycle. In the life. Right?
In that life.
We're getting short on time. Why don't we run through the event information?
You want to run through it or you want me to?
Sure, I can run through it. And to the point of, we're going to have a survivor tomorrow, Katerina Rosenblatt, who is actually featured in the Miami Herald today. And her story is told, and she's a survivor of sex trafficking. But again, please join us tomorrow from 4 to 7. 4 to 5, there'll be kind of a symbolic stopping the traffic in honor of the campaign that we have, Stop Trafficking of Our Children. And then from 5 to 7 is the program and the celebration, and it's at the Kyriakides Plaza at the Wolfson campus at Miami-Dade College downtown. Plenty of parking available all around. So we really hope to see you there.
And then we also have at the medical campus on Northwest 20th Street near Jackson, something at 12 o'clock for the healthcare workers that they're doing, 1 Billion Rising. And Nancy Ratzen, give again your website and your phone.
Our website is stopsextraffickingmiami.org. And the hotline, if you're a victim or if you've got a tip, if you want information, is 305-350-5567.
and we'll have links on our website. Well, best of luck tomorrow, and I hope it's very, very successful, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Food and Dining up next. And it's today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Well, we're going to move along to a little bit less grim.
Change gears.
Yes, we're going to change gears. Of course, Valentine's Day is tomorrow. Perhaps you aren't going out to dinner with that special person, but you want to stay home and have a nice candlelit meal with linen tablecloth and napkins, an appetizer, soft music, perhaps some really good champagne.
Sounds good, Linda.
And then who knows what goes on from there.
Are you cooking?
Who knows what goes on after that?
Hello, Bonnie.
Well, the meal you described is going to take a few hours.
Well, joining me now is chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer, and we have a special guest to give tips on how to pull that scenario off.
Hello. Nice to be with you. Talking about gifts, you know, going out to dinner or buying a gift. And as you said, Joe, how about an elegant but easy dinner at home? Our guest is going to give us our tips. She's the Food Network star, Kelsey Nixon. Her show is Kelsey's Essentials, and her latest book is Kitchen Confidence. Welcome, Kelsey.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners, as well. What is your favorite Valentine dinner? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Do we have email, Bonnie?
We do, radio@WLRN.org.
And also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns that you can read in today's Miami Herald. And you can also read Fred's wine column in today's Herald. Fred, Valentine's drinks, do you think?
Absolutely. Although first I want to say that I went to her website and checked it out, and she has, Joe, you'll be happy to hear this, she has mac and cheese with bacon and deviled eggs with brown sugar bacon. So she's one of us.
I'm a bacon lover. There's no question about that.
Everything's better with bacon. You can get bacon floss now.
Thank you for that information. That was important for us to know.
Anyway, I'm going to talk about wine for Valentine's Day, obviously.
Oh, you are? I can imagine what it'll be, huh?
Yeah.
A little bubbly?
Yeah.
A little bubbly, you think?
A little bit.
Okay, Kelsey Nixon. Okay, Valentine's dinners can get out of hand, and I had to smile at your description in your book of the first Valentine dinner you made for your husband. You worked all day, and you worked so hard that when you finally sat down to dinner, you cried.
I did. It was a disaster.
I smile because many of us have done the same thing. So help us out. Give us a suggestion for Valentine's dinner.
Well, you know, I think that many of us understand that going out for Valentine's Day is tough because it's hard to get a reservation, and they're overbooked, and it's, you know, menus can be overpriced. And so we like the notion of staying home and making Valentine's dinner. But then I think that we tend to put this added pressure on ourselves to make this elaborate meal. And I think that's where people get themselves into trouble. I think that making a nice, simple meal, sticking to what you know, making recipes that you're really comfortable with, is definitely the way to go. Because you want to enjoy the evening. You don't want all this extra added pressure, and by all means, you don't want to end the night in tears. So I am a fan of sticking to really basic, delicious recipes.
So what are some ideas for us?
For example, I love making a great steak at home. And I think that's something that can be often intimidating to people. But I think it's about equipping yourself with the right equipment and the right cuts of meat. So a cast iron skillet, for example, this is something I talk about in Kitchen Confidence and on my show, Kelsey's Essentials. It's one of those essential tools in the kitchen that doesn't cost that much money, but boy, will it make a big difference in your searing off a steak at home.
Well, you know, they're really wonderful, Kelsey, these cast iron skillets, but it's hard to keep them clean and keep them from getting rusty. and also first tell us what kind of steak we should have, and then tell us how to handle our skillet.
So I'm a fan of, if you're looking for a nice, quick option, I'm a huge fan of skirt steak at the moment because it cooks very quickly. I think it's really easy to kind of manipulate the cut to know when you've cooked it too long, when you haven't cooked it too long. So I'm a huge fan of skirt steak at the moment. And when it comes to taking care of that cast iron skillet, if you can keep a few things in mind, like to never use dish soap on it, and to really limit the amount of water you use, it really will hold up quite well. And really, the more you use it, the better it gets when it comes to seasoning it up. So I've really fallen in love with using my cast iron skillet. And while I do the cooking in the house, my husband, he's the master at doing the dishes. And boy, has he received an instruction or two about taking care of those cast iron skillets because I love them so much.
I once had someone put mine in the dishwasher.
No! Oh, man.
Catastrophe. What I like about it is that her husband does the dishes. That's a good Valentine's gift, I have to say.
You know what? That is an arrangement that works out well in our home, and I often remind him. And you know, there's no complaining. That's his role in the kitchen. The cooking's my role, and we feel great about it.
Great. So now let's get back to our Valentine's dinner. So yeah. You're not going to put any sauce on the steak? It's just going to be plain, delicious steak?
No. I'm going to do a sauce, but you know what I love doing? I love doing a chimichurri sauce, which is something you can throw together in food processor or blender really, really quickly. It's nice and bright, fresh herbs. It's a little acidic. I add some red wine vinegar to it, garlic in there for a nice pungent kick. And it's so simple. It comes together literally in under a minute, and it's a nice, beautiful, bright green color drizzled over a skirt steak that's sliced thin against the grain. So beautiful, so delicious, and very quick and easy and approachable.
Is that parsley?
Parsley, yes. I like to add a little bit of basil in my chimichurri as well.
And some little cilantro sometimes.
Cilantro, yes, exactly. You can really manipulate it based on your preference for herbs, but... I love the zing of the vinegar in there and the garlic.
Right, and to tell you a little bit, might not be so happy for you to hear, Kelsey, but we can buy chimichurri sauce already made here. So that'll make you,
I'm jealous.
Your Valentine's dinner a little bit easier. So let's go on, because you started talking a little bit about your book, and we want to make our dinners easier, and one way to make that is to know your way around the kitchen. So... how can we organize our kitchen? What are some quick tips to make sure our kitchen's organized?
Well, when it comes to organizing your kitchen, I think that one thing I like to do is put things in like places. For example, I have one area of my kitchen that's dedicated to all of my baking needs. And everything from, offset spatulas to cookie sheets and parchment paper all live in one place. And I think that it's important to set yourself up for success in the kitchen. You know, it may feel daunting and intimidating to take an afternoon to organize that kitchen, but boy, when you do, and you set yourself up in nice working order, it makes a big difference.
Well, you know, that is so true, Kelsey. When my sister comes to visit, she's always upset with me because I have my coffee cups in a separate place from where the coffee is. And she always says to me, have the coffee, have the sugar, have the coffee cups right there. I don't want to have to walk across the kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, I'm a big fan of kind of organizing by category. Another thing that I'm a big fan of is using clear storage. So, for example, my flour, my sugar, oatmeal, things like that, I like keeping those in airtight containers that are clear. I find that when you can see something, you're more likely to use it. So even grains like quinoa or pastas, I like to keep in clear containers, and I really reach for them more often because they're visible on that shelf.
Right, the tip you give or the time you spent, which is really a valuable time that you just, every once in a while you stop and you reorganize your closet, your cabinets and all, because we all do. We find that something in the back that we forgot we had and we've bought three more.
And, you know, sometimes that thing that you found in the back may just inspire a weeknight meal. You know, it may just inspire you to switch something up or make a recipe that you haven't made in a long time. And, gosh, I don't know about you, but I'm always welcome to that. Even, where cooking is my profession, I'm just like every other person out there where I'm looking for new ideas. I'm looking for things that work in the middle of the week. And sometimes discovering that quinoa that's been tucked away for a couple of months is just the thing to spark a recipe reminder for a quinoa pilaf, or maybe a soup that includes quinoa or something like that.
Right. So
in
let me
ask. Household, my wife does the reorganizing, and then I can't find anything for a month.
Oh gosh.
But I bet you can find the wine.
Oh
yes,
yeah,
I bet you can.
If you have enough around, you can always spot some of it.
So Kelsey, you've told us to make a steak for Val. Let's go back to Valentine's.
Yes.
So what are you making for Valentine's?
Well, ironically, I'm on a book tour, so me and my sweetheart are on separate sides of the country. So bless his heart, he's probably ordering pizza, poor guy. But we celebrated it. We celebrated a week or two early. And I made just what I described. I made a script steak with a chimichurri sauce. He's a big meat and potatoes guy. And so to go with the steak, I made a recipe from my book, Smashed Potatoes. And I'm a fan of these because I think you get all of the deliciousness that comes with mashed potatoes, but yet you're not required to be quite as perfect. I'm a big fan of leaving the skins on and having some texture in my potatoes. And I always like to add a little bit of cream cheese. And I feel that that just takes them from good to great.
So you just smash
what kind
them.
Of potatoes do you use for that?
I use a Yukon Gold. So just like making mashed potatoes. But I like, it's crazy. I think that a lot of people don't make mashed potatoes because it's like, oh, great. I'm going to have skins. They're going to be lumpy. And they set themselves almost for failure before they even begin. So this idea of calling them smashed potatoes, it's kind of like calling something rustic in cooking, right? If you say, I'm making a rustic this or that, then no one expects it to look perfect, and you've gone ahead and saved yourself. So this is the same thing with potatoes.
Well, that sounds really delicious, Kelsey, but we're going to have to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest today is TV celebrity Kelsey Nixon. She's been giving us some wonderful Valentine dinner tips. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Our guest is TV Food Network star Kelsey Nixon. Her show is Kelsey's Essentials, and her new book is Kitchen Confidence. She's been giving us tips on some simple, elegant Valentine's dinners where we're all drooling, and helping us organize our kitchens for speedy cooking. She's going to be coming to Miami South Beach Food and Wine Festival. So I think she's going to be at the brunch on Sunday, the February 23rd. Is that right, Kelsey?
That's correct. I'll be part of Trish's Southern Brunch, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, that sounds great. She was on our program last year, Trish. She's terrific. Well, it's dinner in minutes time. So here's another easy, elegant Valentine dinner, or any time dinner. Kelsey gave us steak, so I'm giving you lamb. It's Florentine lamb with tomato linguine. So herb-crusted lamb steaks. Now, I like to get a lamb steak that they cut a slice right through the leg. It's about an inch thick. It has a little round bone in the center. If you don't see it in the display case, ask the butcher for it. But it only takes a few minutes to cook it. So to go with it, I mixed up some garlic and some rosemary and breadcrumbs, and I broil the steak, maybe about 7 minutes, this lamb steak. I turn it over, put the breadcrumbs on top, another few minutes, and it's done. And while that's on, take some spinach, put it in the microwave, cook it for a couple of minutes, then mix a little cream, a little nutmeg in it, and you serve the lamb over the spinach, and that's why it's called lamb Florentine. To go with it, boil up some linguine, toss with some tomatoes, olive oil, salt, and pepper, and that's just a few-minute dinner. Delicious. Mm-hmm. The complete recipe and a photo. Is that, that's, I didn't put any bacon in it. It's all right?
Oh, that's all right.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, you still could.
<That's> delicious.
Okay, the photo and the recipe, dinnerinminutes.com. And if you're looking for another Valentine's dinner, in today's Miami Herald, I have a coffee-rubbed steak with sautéed garlic potatoes. And that's in today's Miami Herald. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer.
Linda, I'm proud. This is Kathleen. I'm proud to say my favorite tried and true Valentine's Day dinner is the fillet of beef with cognac mustard sauce recipe that I clipped from one of Linda's Dinner in Minutes columns over 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
This dovetails nicely with Kelsey's suggestion of preparing steak in the skillet, but using filet mignon with cognac mustard sauce makes it really, really special.
Boy, I'm hungry now. Thank you. Thank you.
Kathleen.
Thank you very much. Fred, what are we drinking?
Well, if it's Valentine's Day, it's time for my annual plea for wine fans to give rosé wines the respect they deserve and use them to celebrate the hedonistic holiday.
Hedonistic?
Hedonistic, yes,
okay.
It is.
All right.
And rosés can be wonderful. They can be as pink as a lover's blush, as happy as her laugh, as lively as her sense of humor.
Where did you get that from?
He's a poet.
Fred, yeah, and then you throw in a little poetry scene, and then you got it made. Okay. It's the perfect wine to drink a toast to her, or I suppose to him. But sad to say, many wine fans even today turn up their noses at rosés, and it's a shame. The wine's got a bad rep in the 1970s with the creation of Blush Zinfandels, if you remember those.
Remember Matus?
Yeah, they were too sweet, too bland, not much more than Kool-Aid with alcohol, kind of like the wine version of a blind date. those bad
There's nothing
old
to say about
have been
that,
over
Fred.
For decades now. Before the end of the 1980s, passionate wine fans had risen up and smitten those blush winemakers with the wrath of cast-aside friends with benefits. And many winemakers, to their benefit, listened. They started turning out lively, fruity, dry, crisp, and delightful rosés. So today, rosés are back. And come on, people, catch up. One proof that rosés are wonderful again is that a bottle of the really good stuff, for example, Bollinger's rich and spicy Grand Anais Rosé Champagne will set you back 209 smackers. Mm. And you know, all those rich people drink that can't be wrong. But you don't have to spend that much.
I was going to say, most rosés are really expensive, aren't they, Fred?
The top rosé champagnes are very expensive, yeah. And it's a reflection of the people who really know about wine are demanding these things. It's a matter of supply and demand. But as they say, you don't have to spend that much. There's a Mirabel Brut Rosé sparkling wine by Schramsberg in California that's only $27 a bottle. Or if you want your rosé without bubbles, you can try the Holman Ranch Rosé from California, which is only $22. And you can even have a sweet rosé if you want, a good sweet rosé, that is. Behringer makes a white Zinfandel that tastes like sweet strawberries, but this is no Kool-Aid wine. This is light and zingy and lively and crisp with natural fruit acids. These guys know how to do it right, and it's only about $8.
Wow, that's a good price.
Yeah, you can't beat that. And finally, if all this doesn't work, if she decides to dump you or you dump her, check out my column in today's Miami Herald. It has tips on how to throw a Valentine's Day bah humbug party. So either way, I got you covered.
Oh, thank you, Fred. Wow. Thank you, Fred Tesco.
Not very optimistic, Fred.
You can't drop the bomb on Valentine's Day, can you?
Well, it's been known to happen. I never did it, but, you know.
I have been dumped on Valentine's Day. It does happen.
Oh, Kelsey. Oh.
But this is the ironic part. By my husband of today, he dumped me in college on Valentine's Day, so I still make sure he never forgets it.
Could you elaborate on that?
For that, even as we speak.
Are you stuck with him?
I stuck with him. Boy, did he have to work hard, though, guys.
He had to pay
and
for
I'll
it.
And I'll always have one up on him for that.
Well, it sounds to me like you're dumping him a little bit this time.
Yeah, right? I like I said, I like to remind him every Valentine's Day, remember when we were young and stupid. And anyways, it's a good memory of Valentine's Day. He likes to remind me that every Valentine's Day from here on out will always be better than that one. So,
well, there you go. All right. Well, I'm glad at least you had a chance to have a Valentine's Day before your book tour.
Yeah.
That was smart.
Was great.
Okay, well, let's get back to some of the cooking techniques in your book, Kitchen Confidence. Indoor grilling. So many people live in apartments or condos and can't grill outside. And how can we make our indoor grilling taste like some of the flavors of an outdoor grill? What about that smoky flavor? Give us some tips.
You know, I'm a fan of stocking yourself up with the right tools and equipment and the right ingredients. So ingredients like smoked paprika or chipotle powder or my loved bacon can really give you some of the authentic smoky flavors that you're after when it comes to grilling. If you really want to take it to the next level, and a little natural liquid smoke can give your food a really nice kind of grill-kissed taste. And it's really fun to use. You want to use it sparingly because a little bit goes a long way, but really that's a fun ingredient to have on hand. And when it comes to tools, I'm a big fan of that cast iron grill pan that gets smoking hot to give you both the grill marks and the char and that flavor that everyone loves about grilling.
Right, and have a good fan in your kitchen.
Definitely have a good fan, or else that smoke alarm's going to be going off every time.
Well, there's a lot. You're right. There are a lot of smoky kind of spices in the supermarket, and it's a good chance to just go in and look and see what's there to give us a nice, great flavor. But it's been a really, really tasty week. We're out of time. Kelsey Nixon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. Her book is Kitchen Confidential: Great Tips for Cooking. Now, next week, we're going to be talking with FIU.
No, the name of the book is
Kitchen Confidence.
Confidence. You said confidential.
I did it again.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's all right.
You're confusing it with
yes,
Bourdain.
Bourdain. Kelsey, forgive me.
We are very different.
But we're looking forward to seeing you here at Miami Beach at the festival, the South Beach Food and Wine Festival. But next week, we're going to be talking with FIU Dean Mike Hampton. He'll tell us about their new facility and the amazing new research that they're doing there.
Linda, thanks for the Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, chocolate
mint. Chocolate thin mint.
Yeah, Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. You can always hear our programs or relay them to a friend with free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. More information, links, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell in the South Florida Arts Beat. We return Monday, President's Day, with a program about the granddaddy of them all, George Washington. Washington. He contravened the U.S. Constitution to create the, quote, imperial presidency. And on this day in 1933, 81 years ago, the birth of actress Kim Novak in Chicago, who became a star for her role in Picnic, also The Man with the Golden Arm and Vertigo. In the 1950s, she dated Sammy Davis Jr. And on this day in 1944, 70 years ago, the birth of lowbrow talk host Jerry Springer in the London, England bomb shelter. Once a mayor of Cincinnati, he's also a musician. Throw some chairs around. And one more on this day in 1945, 69 years ago, Allied planes bombed the German city of Dresden. A resulting firestorm destroys 15 square miles of the city's center. The number of civilian deaths vary, but some 25,000 probably died. Both recipes at dinnerinminutes.com. We didn't say goodbye to Fred Tasker. I'm sure he's hurt. So we leave with this from Jerry Springer, who worked on Bobby Kennedy's brief presidential campaign. Quote, "It's just a show. It's not the end of Western civilization. It's like chewing gum." Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Next, it's Here and Now from NPR News.